As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We've now entered into a new era of the Iranian war conflict, and it seems as though the patience of a whole lot of folks are waning. Brandon Buck joins us, research fellow in foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, what we've not seen from the president for a while relative to Iranian officials is he hadn't really been calling them names. Well, I believe yesterday or the day before, he referred to them as scum. And it seems as though he has completely lost his patience relative to the way that they're conducting themselves with this on again, off again, on again. And I'm hearing this morning they're trying to get back on the track yet again. Where do we go from here?
Well, the president says a lot of things. He also said on the flight back from Europe that the Iranians are desperate for a deal, as he said so many times before. So where do we go from here? It's tough to say. I mean, I sort of jokingly said that it's only a ceasefire if it's from the ceasefire region of France. And what this is more like a managed reduction in hostilities. I think both sides are trying to reestablish deterrence. And they obviously have distrust of the other, clearly, over the course of many decades of relations, but even just within the course of establishing the MOU. So I think the efforts on both sides to get back on track are sincere, because the material constraints that got the MOU process started they very much remain, as do the political concerns for Washington.
When we so what is it that the Iranians really need to do to show that they're in good faith? I mean, it seems that opening the strait, that's the leverage point, that's the friction point. Why are they so unwilling to abandon what they're doing? I mean, it just seems they're not going to be able to put tolls on shipping. We're not going to allow international shipping to be impeded that way and impacted that way. So at what point do they say, okay, we're done with that?
Well, it's the biggest lever that they have. I mean, so at what point do they say that we're done with that? Is it the point in which they believe that the United States is going to follow through on its concessions laid out in the MOU? And I mean, I think that's their biggest concern here, is that they don't, that they will have in the back of their minds the suspicion that the process that they're currently involved in is not merely a end to the longer, history of acrimonious relations with the West and the United States, but, merely just a respite for both sides to refit and rearm. So I think for them, it's a matter of sequencing. And to the credit of the Trump administration, they indeed sequenced this correctly from their point of view. They began to release sanctions on Iranian oil that has since been rescinded. So I think for this to get going again, the Iranians are going to need to feel that this process is indeed genuine and not merely just a current lull in the fighting.
It seems to me the rhetoric that's going on around the room as opposed to in the room may be causing more harm than good, and is really shaking, not only the markets, but the insurers that insure the vessels that have to travel through the Strait of Hormuz and otherwise. And so you have now multiple economic friction points outside the control of these folks, because they just keep engaging in the rhetoric, meaning both sides, the U.S. as well as Iran.
Yeah, for sure. And, there are three major parties here, the United States, Israel, and, of course, Iran. And, one of the first, I think the first clause of the MOU was that both sides were going to restrained from, making various threats. And the president, the very next day after signing the MOU, was making threats and threatening to kidnap the negotiators, which not exactly reassuring to the other side. And of course, the Iranians have done their own share of violations, of course, shooting on those three vessels a few days ago. And I think it's important to recall that countries are not black boxes, be it the United States or Israel or Iran, and they have political spectrums just like ours. Maybe not just like ours, but they certainly have them. And then the Iranians have hardliners in their own government that don't want to negotiate with the United States, certainly not at this point. So what we might be seeing is just those folks, reasserting their own dominance within their own government. So I think, I think we're in store for another few days, maybe a week or so of horizontal escalation for the purposes of reestablishing deterrence on either side within, and then again some sort of renewed effort to contain or hopefully end the conflict.
Been listening to a number of talking heads yesterday and last night talking about the fact that maybe it's time to move to a different aspect, namely regime change, and continue to talk and articulate about the ability of the Iranian people to take control of their country. I have a real difficult time seeing this through that lens. Your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. And I, I'm generally a pessimistic person, and I try not to make too many predictions, especially on this, in this arena, because it's been pretty unpredictable. But like as I said earlier, the material constraints remain. The United States is still maybe not critically low on key munitions like interceptors and precision guided weapons, but there are now legitimate concerns about being able to meet other contingencies elsewhere in the world now because of how long this war has gone on. And so that remains. So like unless Washington got, a massive backfill of those ordinances secretly, then those concerns still remain. And they're also certainly, the continued economic ramifications, particularly if oil gets back up to $100 a barrel, if not more, those things will continue to constrain, or at least ought to constrain, Washington's thinking here. So if they do try to go whole hog into some kind of, regime change operation or some sort of covert iteration thereof, they're going to again run into those constraints. So it's difficult to see how that's going to be seriously on the menu as far as policymakers go.
And as this says, this increase in kinetic activity by the Iranians, how surprised have you been that there's like no presence of the Houthis in Yemen and not a whole lot? Well, I can understand more so Hezbollah. They kind of have their hands tied right now with with what the IDF is doing up there in southern Lebanon. But the Houthis have been kind of interestingly quiet here.
That's right. I mean, it's that's anyone's guess. I mean, it could be Tehran is just keeping them in their back pocket. Perhaps they feel like they don't need to utilize them right now. And so they're, they're best being served as a reserve force for them rather than to use them right now. If I'm correct, and really what we're in store for is more of a horizontal escalation than a vertical one, then this, at least from Tehran's perspective, it's probably best to keep them in reserve rather than use them now.
We have met with the Iranians in person many times. What we were told were very productive meetings really haven't revealed itself that way, and had, in my view, hadn't really come to fruition. Is there a better way to coordinate with these individuals?
If I had an answer to that, I probably wouldn't be on the phone with you right now. honestly, I don't know.
Where would you be, Brandon? Tell us. Where would you be?
Hopefully making more money. Honestly, I don't know. I think ultimately, what's going to happen here is that both sides will continue to tire each other out. And the president, the president, frankly, just looks exhausted. And I know I'm just kind of I'm just going on vibes here, but he looks like he's over it. And so I think, again, both sides will lob missiles and rockets at one another for over the course of a few days, maybe a few weeks, and then we'll be right back to where we were. Again, I'm loath to make predictions here, but when all of this started, I was forced to make one, and basically it was that the United States and Iran would settle into a kind of, I don't want to say Cold War, but a kind of pseudo belligerent state in which they kind of do this forever. And I think the president perhaps thinks that as long as he can keep oil at below $100 a barrel and maintain the economic damage, he can do just that. That's certainly plausible, particularly if they reinstall the blockade and try to keep kinetic activity, if you will, at a minimum. Perhaps they believe that they can do that for the foreseeable future.
It's almost as if he's mentioned this several times, like bridges, and of inflicting some indirect pain on the citizens of Iran. I don't know if that is going to be the next stage, but I'm curious whether or not motivates these folks. It doesn't look like they care much about the well-being of their electorate. They kill them at will. But, it's funny to find, where's the pain point for them? And I guess that's exactly what's frustrating the president. It seems like no one historically has ever been able to find it.
Yeah, and bombing alone doesn't have a very good historical track record when it comes to achieving maximalist aims. And regime change is a maximalist aim, and historically those require maximal effort. And so bombing alone has not really had much of a very doesn't have a very good track record for achieving those aims. Iran's a very large country. It can soak up a lot of damage. There have been various leaks and stuff out of the various offices here in Washington, saying that, anywhere from 3/4 to half of Iran's missile stockpiles remain intact, if not buried, but nevertheless still retrievable and fireable. And so we are in, what is effectively a war with attrition with a regime that has a whole lot more to lose than the average American does. That gives them escalation dominance, despite them being a far weaker power. So that's where we are. And it's difficult to see how anyone in Washington will be willing to pay the cost to achieve those maximal aims.
Were you surprised when the president, I believe yesterday, said, maybe we'll just take Karg Island?
Yeah, well, he's been saying that a lot. And am I surprised? Unfortunately, I'm not surprised. There are, competing institutions here in D.C. who have proven profiting that idea since the start of the war, if not long before. And, again, this is something that appeals to the president, this idea of taking the oil, right, as an element of his Venezuela policy. It informed his desire to stay in Syria longer than perhaps he even would have wanted himself. He is kind of a divided mind there. And so I think this idea of seizing the resources for the purposes of either negotiation or U.S. benefit is something that appeals to him because that idea has appealed to him in other theaters. If they fall through on it, is another thing altogether. And I think that is far more logistically difficult than its supporters have put on, and I think perhaps in Washington they realize that as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess over the next 3, 4 to 5 days is going to be pretty telling as to where this is going to go next and whether or not there really is this desire and ability to get together and try and put all of this back on track. The level of distrust has to be greater than it ever was, far greater than when we started this process, one would think, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Brandon Buck, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time, your insight, research fellow in foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute. We love the work that you guys do. Keep up the great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Love to hear from you. Give us a shout. We'll be right back.